Welcome in, everybody, to the CC Podcast. It is Friday, January 19th, the morning of. Mike Rutherford here in snowy Louisville, Kentucky. Got hit with about a couple inches and counting still now. I think it's also a little snowy up there in Columbus, Ohio. How is Dan Starr and the family up there?
Well, yeah, kids have a snow day, which, I mean, hey, I love kids. I'm sure that's like the highlight of the year for kids, getting a snow day. For old Dan, trying to get some work done, not really the highlight. So, luckily enough, my sister-in-law, she lives kind of right down the street. So got together with the cousins and they're over there right now. So, but yeah, I'm sure we'll be out shoveling. There's like no hill. Here's one thing about Columbus that drives me insane. It's a very flat city. The sledding is just so poor compared to Louisville. Like Louisville, you had so many options. Columbus, it's very rare to find, like, you know, our best hill is probably like 35th on Louisville's best hill.
Maybe you should move back. Just saying.
Yeah. Well, I miss it.
By the way, welcome to old Mike's world when it comes to the kids being there when you're trying to get some stuff done. I remember when Mary and I lived here and it was just us before we had kids, and I was like so spoiled when it came to working conditions. Like, you know, she would come down and she'd like ask me some questions. And if I was in the middle of writing something, I'd be like, okay, like I need to focus. And I would always, I would need perfect quiet, no distractions to get anything done. And I was like, I don't know how anybody ever worked in like those busy newsrooms that you see in the movies back in the day. And now it sounds like someone's being murdered upstairs, probably 75% of the day. Like, if you didn't know any better, you would think that one of the kids is quite literally like just like stabbing one of the other kids to death. It's just constant screaming, constant crying, and like you just have to learn how to live with it. We have every now and then we'll have like a maintenance guy over here or somebody who's fixing something, and they're like, "How do you do it, man?" And I'm like, "I don't know."
My dream is for you to be on the ACC network and have like the incident where that one like BBC news guy did, where like the baby runs in, like, and you see the sitter just dive after this baby and crawl out. One of the all time news clips.
Oh, one of the best videos of all time. It has happened when I've done like radio spots and they've heard the commotion upstairs and they've been like, you need to take care of that. And I'm like, they're fine. Like, their mom's got it or something. Like, that's been pretty bad, but it has not happened on video yet. I think video with the AC network, I've done it at the radio station because I just don't want to jinx it. I don't want that to happen.
I think, yeah, I'll be upstairs and Kim, I mean, bless her soul, but like, she probably thinks I'm just like the biggest asshole. Cause like, I'll text, be like, needs to be more quiet. Yep, still too loud. Like, like obviously she's like, Danny, what do you want me to do? I'm trying my best here. You know, my youngest daughter is, you know, when she throws a fit, she can tear the paint off the walls. So, yeah, that's kind of the situation we're in.
It is bad, yeah, because I'll get the same. Mary works at our house. Mary works upstairs. I work in the basement. The kids are on, like, the main floor. And Mary's constantly leading work calls for her job. Her job's is way more important than mine. And so she will be in the middle of a work call and you'll just hear, you know, Virginia being like, I don't like you. And just yelling at the bottom of the stairs. And she's like, hey, any chance you can go up there and kind of calm things down? And I'm like, I'll do my best. It's tough. What are you going to do?
They run the household.
They really do. Speaking of things we don't like, Louisville men's basketball in action on Wednesday night against North Carolina. We're going to talk about the game first. We will talk about the post-game comments, which I think became, as they tend to do, a bigger story than the actual game itself.
It's part of the podcast itinerary now. It's like, talk about the game, talk about the presser.
I mean, I'm literally, yeah, I write up the quick post-game story. I'm kind of paying attention to what people are saying on Twitter after the game, waiting for the Kenny Payne press conference. And then I see that clip, and I'm like, there's my 3 hours of radio tomorrow. Like yeah. Nobody's going to talk about the game. You know... I mean, hell, it's probably going to seep over into today's show. It's just, it's, I don't know what to do with Kenny Payne at the podium. We'll talk about that in a second, though. But first and foremost, Louisville goes to Chapel Hill. They take on a fourth-ranked North Carolina team. By the way, so Louisville at tip-off was a 21.5-point underdog. Trivia time. This was the second biggest spread since 1991-92, since Oddsmaker has been tracking spreads. Second biggest spread against Louisville. what do you think the first biggest spread is? And here's a hint. It's recent.
Oh, it's recent. I was going to say, I was going back to Denny's last year to try to think. It's recent. Jeez. It's like my fandom recently hasn't been nearly as attentive as it was in years past. I don't even have a guess. Like I'm trying to think of like an out of conference game that we've played the last couple. Maybe one of those like Hawaii games or something. I don't know. That's my guess. I couldn't even give you a team.
It was last year. It was a non conference game. I think you're overthinking it. New Year's Eve on the road against Kentucky. Louisville was a 23.5-point underdog. And look, both those games that we're talking about, 20-plus underdogs, we covered the spread. So
we're back. That.
We're definitely back. Louisville, by the way, has been an underdog of 15 points or more just 18 times since 1992. Only 18 times. How many of those do you think have come in the last year and a half under Kenny Payne's watch?
I mean, it's definitely double digits. I'll probably say 13.
15.
Oh, my God.
15 of the 18 times in modern history that we've been a 15-plus point underdog have been just in the last year and a half under Kenny Payne. It happened 3 times under Denny Crum. It happened 0 times under Rick Pitino. We were never a 15-point or more underdog. Did not happen. But we were in this game. We were a sizable 21.5-point underdog. And look, Louisville covered the spread. The game itself was not, I didn't think at least, like overly surprising. There was no element of it that was shocking. The team came out. They did their typical, like, let's fall behind by double digits. Why are we still starting Danilo Yovanovich and Hersey Miller and then not playing them at all the rest of the game and putting ourselves in this hole? And then they played even with North Carolina for most of the rest of the first half. Carolina goes on a nice run right before the break, takes a 17-point lead into the locker room. And then to Louisville's credit, Louisville comes out. They make 9 of their first 10 shots in the second half. They ultimately cut the UNC lead to 5. They actually cut it to 5 multiple times. Both times UNC answers right away. They pull away late. They can basically name the score, and they run away with an 86-70 victory. Nothing overly shocking there. I think Louisville's offense is definitely taking significant steps forward. I think the effort level is still taking significant steps forward. The issue with this team is they don't defend well enough to beat anybody of consequence, I think, this year. They don't defend well enough to beat a good team. You could say, oh, I thought Miami was a good team. Miami's looking like they're going to be not an NCAA tournament team. They just lost to Florida State at home. They don't defend anybody either, and they missed a ton of wide-open shots against us. We just don't defend well in these types of games to ever really have anybody believe that we're gonna spring a significant upset. And it's the Achilles heel of this team. It's been the Achilles heel of this program for the last couple of years. We just don't guard. And Cormac Ryan, a guy who's a really good shooter, having a bad shooting year, it was very predictable. He's going to come in, we're going to give him open looks, and he's going to knock down 4 of 7 three-pointers. Jalen Withers, of course, has his best game as a Tar Heel, goes for 15-10. We let RJ Davis, the ACC's leading scorer, score 21 points. Armando Bacot did not have a double-double against us for the first time in 4 years, which was nice, but he did have 19-7. Offensively, we did some good things, but overall, it's a 16-point loss on the road. I don't care what we're talking about. That cannot be a moral victory at a program like Louisville, especially in year two of a new head coach. Dan, your overall thoughts on what we saw from the Cards Wednesday night?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you on the effort. I'm with you on taking some strides in the offensive end. I actually think if we would have played that game against some of these other ACC teams, I'm not saying we would win a lot of those games, but I think it would kind of be nip and tuck towards the end. But, I mean, digging ourselves our hole, you know, a huge hole with this starting lineup just continues to drive me crazy. But, I mean, you said it. Defense, we're nowhere close, and like we just don't have the horses, plus we're relying on too many young guys. I mean, credit to our guys, we got it to within 5. Sky hits a huge 3 in the second half, and then they come down, and you know, it's honestly it's not totally their fault because they're young, but you know, we get Caleb Glenn and Tyler Johnson in a screening situation. There's a breakdown in communication. RJ Davis hits a three, and it's back up to eight just like that. So, I mean, then I think next possession we have two guys in the same team battling for a rebound. Somehow they get it, you know, end up scoring on that possession. So we just don't know how to win. You know, it's going to be hard to come by wins with this little depth, with this little defense. You bring up the Cormac Ryan situation, like how he wasn't shooting well. And this is something that I, you know, obviously since the Kenny Payne era, like Louisville fans obviously aren't used to losing like this, but there is something to be said for like when you're this bad, you know, opponents that come in and play you, like they're kind of salivating. Like, I mean, whatever. I'm relating this back to like teams we'd play in high school, but it's like, oh my God, like, and this isn't a slight at Holy Cross, but it's like, oh, we play Holy Cross tonight. Like, I'm going to get mine tonight. Like, I'm going to get, you know, 10, 14. I'm going to get up as many shots as possible. And like, I think that's like the mentality a lot of these teams have when they see us on the schedule. They're like, all right, this is our get right game. They play looser. You know, they're more willing to just kind of let it fly. And we've never really been on that side of it before. So it's obviously a tough pill to swallow, but right now we don't have the horses.
For the record, Holy Cross is good this year.
And are they? Well, hey, good. I'm happy for them. Probably not better than Trinity, but whatever.
Yeah. Rashawn Myers, who I do the show with sometimes, his son is one of their stars. He's a very good little player.
All right.
They've gotten a lot better. And okay, you're also taking shots at our guy Justin Rank, who was playing on those Holy Cross teams that used to get right against.
Gotcha. Well,
direct shots.
I probably should have used another school, but
Walden.
Yeah, it's the one that, yeah, there we go. Walden was definitely a get right game.
I think fans of all fan bases love to do the thing where it's like, this guy hasn't made a shot in 3 weeks. And of course, you know, he's going 4 of 7 from three against us. At some point, it's not just a weird trend. At some point it's having to, like, if you go to basically any Division I college basketball game and you get there early enough to see shoot around, those guys aren't missing a lot. Like
right,
everybody at this level who's a guard is typically a good shooter. If they're shooting 27% for the season from three, they're probably like a 45% shooter if you're just not guarding them at all. And we don't guard anybody from the perimeter. We don't know how to go over screens against shooters. Hell, we don't. You said it was a communication issue between, you know, Caleb Glenn and Tyler Johnson. I think they just don't know what to do. We have no idea. We never guard a high ball screen the same way two possessions in a row. And the result is, you know, we end up with giving up a lot of slip screen dunks. We end up giving up a lot of, you know, wide open threes in the perimeter. We don't know how to find shooters. We don't know what to do defensively at all. So it's not shocking to see Cormac Ryan do what he did. It won't be shocking. You know, we play Wake Forest tomorrow. It won't be shocking to see their best couple 3-point shooters get loose and knock down some shots. I mean, the only reason we beat Miami is, you know, Nigel Pack took a bunch of wide open threes and just missed them. And a bunch of their guys did the same thing in that game. I thought there were certainly some good moments. I thought Sky Clark played well. It was nice to see. You know, he's not – there was a possession where RJ Davis, I think it was, just would not let him go around him.
Yeah.
He was just dogging him
over
on defense.
Over-dribbled, yep.
And, like, that's – Sky is – he's a good ball handler. He's not quick enough to get around the best guards in the ACC or the best guards in college basketball a lot. And on those types of nights, he's going to have to let his outside shot do some of the talking, and he did. He knocked down 4 or 5 threes. I thought played pretty composed. It was nice to see him have that type of game. He went a long way towards keeping us in that game. Brandon Huntley Hatfield, I thought offensively was very good as well, going up against Baycott inside with not a lot of help. He did some good things. We forgot about him for long stretches, which tends to happen. Curtis Williams was good again. I still am buying the Curtis Williams stock in large quantities. And also, it was Trey White's best game in a while. I know he's been hurt, but he came out and did some good things. He did dribble it off his foot a couple times on fast breaks, which will happen as well. But offensively, I thought, you know, there were some good things for sure. But overall, it's still a 16-point loss. Like you said, I think that against the bottom half of the ACC, this effort maybe wins you that game. And if there is a good thing to take away, it's, you know, one, you covered the spread against North Carolina on the road. Two, this is the best team you're going to play the rest of the season. There's nobody else in the conference who's this good. And I think that with what we've seen from this team the last week and a half, where, you know, they fought with Carolina for about 30 out of 40 minutes. They played basically shot for shot with NC State after the first couple minutes. They beat Miami on the road. I mean, I could be wrong about this. I'm wrong a lot. But I think I know exactly what's going to happen this season. Like, we're going to keep struggling in January because the schedule is tough. You know, we've got Wake Forest on the road on Saturday. We've got Duke coming in on Tuesday. We play Virginia, who's struggling and has been terrible on the road, but it's still Virginia. And then we're away at Clemson. I think, you know, maybe we win one of those games. It seems likely that we lose all four of them. We're going to win some games in February. Like we're going to get on a little bit of a run. I can see us. There's a stretch in mid-February. We play like Syracuse, Georgia Tech, Boston College, Pitt, and Notre Dame. I can see us winning like three or four of those games. I can see us winning, you know, beating Georgia Tech at home, beating BC away, beating Notre Dame at home, and taking three out of four over a two-week stretch and having everybody be like, is this good enough? We're doing some things. We're winning some games. We're showing progress. This team's getting better as the season goes on. That's what you guys wanted, right? And having that become the narrative that defines the month of February, that will be the new debate. They're actually winning games. I think this team is going to finish 5-15 or 6-14 in the ACC, which is still atrocious, but it's better than probably what we thought it was going to look like when the new year started. Like, they're playing well enough to beat some of the bad teams in the ACC because the bad teams in the ACC are terrible this year. And I think you're going to see this team win some games in February and have like the last gasp of the Kenny Payne crowd, people being like, hey, see, it's better.
No, this is like the scenario that you've been talking about for the past year, like your almost nightmare scenario, except it's not like middle. I mean, we're not like fringe bubble or anything, but it's also like, you know, you're going to have the Kenny supporter saying like, hey, this is what everyone wanted. They wanted effort. You know, they wanted to start getting some wins under their belt and, you know, to end the season like that. It might be a little awkward when it comes to a decision being made. But yeah, I mean, like you said, kind of going back, I've really liked what I've seen from Brandon Huntley Hatfield on the offensive end. And on defense, here's the problem. And again, the Dennis situation, very unfortunate. Like, it just, no one can do anything about that.
Love you, Dennis.
Yeah, we love you, Dennis. But the fact is, like, this offseason, we did not go out and get transfers. We did not build depth for this team. Now you got guys in the second half playing with four fouls. Like, of course, like, when Brandon Huntley Hatfield is going up against Armando Bacot, like, he's going to be tentative on the defensive end. Like, there's just no depth to come in. Like, guys are afraid to foul. They're afraid to get in front of guys. And you just kind of play a different way on defense. So it's just, it's a very tough situation overall. And, you know, another point you made, God, this just sucks so bad that, like, I mean, the ACC is so fucking down. Like, yeah. I mean, there's no reason, like, a competent head coach at Louisville should at least have us on the bubble with this down of an ACC. So, I don't know. But, I mean, it was nice to see the effort for the third straight game. I mean, that sequence at the end of the game where I think Sky dove on the floor and somebody else dove on the floor. Oh, and boy. Fucking Jalen just reaches over and, like, picks up the ball and stumbles his way into making a pass to the corner for three. I was like, God damn, that was like a situation where, you know, and I tweeted this out, like, the basketball gods just still are, you know, giving us like the finger right in our faces saying like, hey, we're still not on your side because we deserve points on that possession. And it didn't work out. So
yeah, it was Jalen Withers making the same kind of lazy play that we saw him make, I don't know, 19,000 times during his time at Louisville.
Yeah.
He was never rewarded for it once at Louisville. It always cost the ball. Like, we're like, Jalen, why are you not getting on the floor? It was some other guy from some other team knocking the ball away from him, them going the other way and getting a fast break bucket. And in this particular game, like, Sky, you're right, dives on the floor, knocks the ball away. I think Tyler gets on the floor. Somebody else gets on the floor. Like, everybody, it's hot potato, and Jalen's just standing there bending over at the waist. And instead of him losing the ball, he winds up getting it knocked right to him, picks it up, fires a cross-court pass, and they knock down a three to basically put the game away. You're totally right. It was the biggest middle finger possible from the basketball gods.
Yeah, and, like, I mean, we're going to get to the Kenny quote in a second, but I guess it is nice to see that like some sort of message has gotten across to the guys, because really the last three games from like an effort standpoint, and like you said, the Miami game, they missed shots. Like we probably should have lost that game. But from an effort standpoint between that, the NC State game, and this, we look like we're definitely making strides in that department. So you're happy to see that. But again, at the end of the day, it comes down to wins and losses, and we're not getting the job done, obviously. But, you know, from an entertainment standpoint, it's nice to see the guys out there hustling.
It is. I mean, you can be upset with the overall state of things. You can think that we have to make a change at the end of this year. We have to make a change at the end of this month, whatever you think, and still recognize that it's better than it was.
Like, yeah. They
have made some improvement. Having said that, it's still like, every time I try to find myself going down that road, like it's so sad that this is what we've been reduced to. I mean, Nick Coffey put out the video yesterday. It was the 4-year anniversary of us going down to Cameron Indoor, taking on a number 3 ranked Duke team, college game day, game of the weekend. You know, we're in the top 10, they're in the top 5, and we go on their home floor and we beat them. It's this crazy game. We jump out to a 15-point lead. Malik Williams has the big dunk at the end. Like, everyone's going nuts. Like, you know, we're euphoric as fans. And 4 years later, we're like, you know, they played pretty hard that 6-point loss to a bad NC State team at home. And, like, that's where we are now. It's very sad.
Yep, definitely lowered. That was when I thought David Johnson was going number 1 overall in the NBA draft. God, that was the best game he probably had in a Cardinal uniform. That was fun.
It was 2 years in a row where he was great down there at Cameron Indoor. He was pretty awesome. All right, let's talk about the quote after the game.
Okay.
I mean, I think we talked about it on the podcast, but like, we need like a shot caller for Cameron. The fans can just be like, nope, 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 when he starts doing something like this. Or we need like Kevin Sweeney from Sports Illustrated wrote the story this week about how Purdue has essentially like an offensive coordinator. They have a guy who just is. His whole role is looking at scouting opposing defenses and planning out the best offense and like calling plays in the middle of the game. Like, that's his whole deal. We need a press conference coordinator, just somebody to sit next to Kenny Payne. And the moment where he starts being like, I probably shouldn't say this, just like grabs him and is like, no, 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 no. Hands him the cards, gives him like the, you need to stay on message type deal, because it happened again. It happened again on Wednesday night, Kenny Payne. And I will say, like, in his defense, he didn't bring up this whole Hubert Davis comparison on his own. He was asked a question about, look, Hubert Davis at North Carolina had a little bit of fan heat on him when he got started. And now look at him, year 3, number 4 team in the country, undefeated team in the ACC. Like, do you have that same sort of feeling about yourself and what you're going through at U of L? It's a ridiculous question. I mean, let's start there. It's a ridiculous question. Hubert Davis, he inherited a North Carolina program that had, for their standards, was down when Roy Williams retired, did not have a great last year by any stretch of the imagination. And he does come out and gets a little bit of heat because the team is like 12-6 at the beginning of the year. His first 2 months are dominated by this narrative of, are they even going to make the NCAA tournament? Remember that was the year they came to the Yum Center and we got fucked by the refs because we should have beaten them.
Yeah.
We were all like, the ACC wants Carolina to be in the tournament. That was the big talking point. They get into the tournament as an 8 seed. They make a run all the way to the national title game. They were the national runner-ups in Hubert Davis's first year. We are comparing a season in which North Carolina won 5 games into in the NCAA tournament to one where Louisville won 4 games the entire year. It's not even apples to oranges. It's apples to cantaloupes. It is a totally different situation. I get that they had a disappointing year last year. They still won 20 games. We've won 10 games now in 7 combined months of basketball. It's not a comparison worth making at all. But so Kenny Payne, he says this in response to that question. Well, I didn't inherit the same thing that he inherited. That's first. What I inherited was broken. My job is to clean it up. Inheriting what I inherited, this is really year 1 for me. That's just me. Other people may see that differently. I wish I inherited something similar to what Hubert inherited. Dan, I'll let you have first crack at this. Your immediate response when Kenny Payne says, not just, Hubert had a way better situation than what I walked into, but, oh, by the way, this is technically year one in my eyes.
Probably the worst mentality you could have as a coach. And to say it out, that's like saying the quiet part out loud. Like, I mean, we do understand, like, the situation wasn't great by any means. But now you're basically throwing everybody and everything under the bus. And the ironic thing is, his year one that, quote unquote, like, didn't happen according to him, one of the guys that he ran off just happened to put up 15 points and 10 rebounds against him that very night. Like, a guy that, and I'm not saying Jalen's like anything special right now, like, he's a role player for North Carolina, but, like, you make this quote after a guy that you ran off in year one just put up 15 and 10 on you. I mean, everything about this is just such a weak mentality. I don't know. Like you said, it's really hard to get this guy in front of a microphone. I just picture him saying that and, like, winking and, like, Bozich in the back, like, nodding his head and winking back. Like, it's like, this is my year one, actually. I swear to
That's
God.
That's going
to
piss him off.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Like, when I saw that, I was like, I mean, you just got to have, like, a little bit of a feel here. Like, you know that that's going to fucking ruffle so many feathers. And if you don't, you know, I don't think you really have a feel for how to handle being a head coach.
If it came out in like 25 years that Kenny Payne was just the world's greatest troll, I'd be surprised, but I wouldn't be shocked. It'd be one of those situations where I'm like, how did we all not figure this out? How do we not get this? He might be the greatest troll in the entire world. When I saw Zan Payne go into the game on Wednesday night against North Carolina, like, I just had this feeling that he's on the sidelines with that shit-eating grin being like, oh, this is really going to fucking piss him off. I can't imagine what they're tweeting right now. I can't wait to look at this when I get back in the locker room. Like, this is good. Like, he just does shit all the time where I'm like, you can't be doing this seriously. You have to be fucking with us. And I had a conversation this summer, I think it was on the radio show, about, like, the classic boxes that you check when you're on a sinking ship as a head coach. You know, there's blaming the fans, there's blaming the players, there's blaming the last coach, like, all that stuff that's happened. You know, there's firing assistants, which has not happened yet. And one of the things that we talked about was the fans and the media and the fan media pivoting to this narrative of, well, technically, I view this as his first season because it's his first year to get his players in, his culture established, all that good stuff. And Tyson Tate, when they had their podcast together, they had this thing where, like, it was a running joke. All coaches who get off to terrible starts and end up getting fired after 2, 3, 4 years, they always try to do this thing where it's like, this is actually my first year. And the joke was, it never works. Like, it never plays well with anybody. And so they'd be like, you know, if Kevin Ollie was in his fourth year, like, this is technically Kevin Ollie's first year, I think. And the fact that Kenny Payne's actually the one who's doing this in his own defense is, it's maddening. It's another gigantic red flag. It's also a little bit insulting. I mean, you made a ton of money in your first year as a head coach. And the people who paid for season tickets, that money was real. The people who paid for suites, that money was real. The 4-28 record that's now on our all-time record, those numbers are real. The lost revenue we had from people shopping, showing up to games, not going to the surrounding businesses, the effect that the buildings and businesses around the Yum Center have felt because basketball attendance has been so low and the team's been so bad, that's real. So everything's real except for your part in it, apparently. And it's such a loser mentality. I hate to put it that way, but it is. And it's an attempt to reframe something in a way that's disingenuous. The reframing that he's trying to do is to say, I walked into this, there was nothing I could have done to alter this. He's acting like he was David Padgett in 2017, who got hired, you know, like as practice was starting. He had no chance to change that roster. He didn't even have a coaching staff. He had to do everything on the fly. Kenny Payne got hired in mid-March of 2022. He had ample opportunity to alter his roster and to make it into something that could have been competitive in his first year. This is not up for debate. Kenny Payne himself in May of that year said, I think we're going to be good. I think if we get some of these transfers that we're going after, we have a chance to be really good. Said it in a news interview. He thought we could be good in year one. He didn't start doing the whole, like, this may be slow. This may be a slow start. I hope you guys stick with this narrative until he'd seen that team practice during the summer months in September and October. Kenny gets the job. He immediately goes out there. He gets Brandon Huntley Hatfield in the transfer portal. He signs a couple of guys that are still available in the 2023 recruiting class. And we're like, all right, let's go. Here we go. He then says thanks but no thanks to a number of players in the transfer portal who wanted to come play at Louisville. I mean, Sean McNeil is definitely one. Sean East is another. Both guys who ended up going to power conference programs and having some success. He thinks that we're going to get some big guys. And this whole notion that he didn't want to use the transfer portal because he felt good about the roster is total bullshit. And we know it's total bullshit because we were in on like 17 transfer portal guys. Like, we were going after a bunch of point guards in the portal, a bunch of the higher names, the biggest names out there that ended up going to different schools. He swings and misses on all of these guys. We'd end up not adding anybody. And the narrative quickly shifts from, he's going to get a guard, don't worry, trust KP, he moves in silence, to, we don't need guards. L. Ellis can run the point by himself. He's a true point guard. He wasn't. And we'll play like Florida State plays. We have 6'7 guys that can handle the ball. Positionless basketball. Nobody wins with small guards anymore. Marquise Noel couldn't do anything in the NCAA tournament. You don't know basketball if you're saying otherwise. And then the season starts, and it's obvious that the roster has been poorly constructed. It's obvious that this guy is getting his feet wet as a head coach. And it's a catastrophe. It's beyond a disaster. It's 4-28. That has to matter. Not fouling against Wright State when you've got fouls to give and letting their best player take a game-winning jumper that he nails at the buzzer. That has to matter. That's on your record. Drawing up a play in the very first game of the season for Kamari Lance, a true freshman that had not made a shot the entire night to try to beat Bellarmine, that happened. That's real. Not calling a timeout in the closing seconds against Appalachian State and having L. Ellis not get a shot off on time, that mattered. That happened. That was real. You cannot tell the story of Kenny Payne at Louisville without talking about the first season. I think we all hoped that it was going to be this wild, crazy outlier, but to act like it wasn't, like, it doesn't entirely, the roster construction doesn't entirely fall on Kenny Payne, because I do think that there were guys out there in the portal that he went after and that he probably couldn't tell definitively, hey, we're going to be eligible for the NCAA tournament. And maybe that played a part. So it's not entirely on him. It's mostly on him, though. He's the head coach. He's paid a ton of money to get this done. He didn't get it done. That's kind of it. And the one thing that I keep going back to, and help me out if you have an answer to this question, is Kenny Payne keeps talking about what he inherited, the broken program, the disaster, there was nothing I could do to fix this. It's going to be a long-ass process and all this stuff. What is different about the situation that Kenny Payne walked into than the situation that Chris Mack was coaching under, right? The NCAA stuff, the latest helping of it, the FBI thing happened in the fall of 2017. We never knew when the punishments were going to come down. Chris Mack couldn't go to a kid in 2020, 2019, 2018 and say definitively, I know we're going to be eligible for the next NCAA tournament. He couldn't say that. There was that black cloud was there the entire time. The black cloud was hanging over Arizona, was hanging over Kansas, it was hanging over NC State, it was hanging over LSU, it was hanging over Memphis. Somehow it only affected us, and it only affected us over the last 18 months. It makes no sense whatsoever. Everybody else was getting players. You got some players. What did you tell Brandon Huntley Hatfield that you didn't tell the other guys? What did you tell Sky Clark and Trey White that you didn't tell the other guys? It just, when he does stuff like this, it all points back in the same direction, which is the direction that we've kind of been trying to hope isn't the case for the last year and a half, that he just doesn't know what he's doing, that he just doesn't know what he's talking about, that he just is not the guy to get this program back to not making NCAA tournaments, but eventually competing for national titles.
Yeah, I would like someone to, I mean, those are all great points. I would love someone in the media to just flat out ask them, like, what did Kansas State, or I'm trying to think of a team that, like, you know, maybe built their roster with transfers or whatnot that's having success. Like, what did Kansas State do, you know, to be successful that you guys haven't done? Or maybe like an apples to apples comparison, because, you know, like you said, it ultimately, I mean, this sounds harsh. It really does. But like, I'm, besides being like a totally nice guy and like trying to, you know, especially how he said it at the beginning of when he first got hired, like get the community involved. Besides that, like, I honestly, like, as a head coach for a team that's quote unquote one of the 10 best, you know, college basketball programs, like, he does not have one kind of redeeming quality. Like, the sidelines, body language, in-game coaching, roster construction, so far recruiting, transfer portal. Like, I'm still seeking it out. If I could say one thing positive, it seems like he's gotten a message across of hustle, but like we said earlier, it, you know, that should be expected. That's not like something that, you know, when you come to Louisville, you're expected to lay it all on the line. So at this point, if for whatever reason he did get a third year, I don't even know like what, I mean, I don't know what kind of boycott I would do. I mean, I love the program. I don't think I would boycott, but I it would be the ultimate slap in the face. So for him to kind of just ignore what happened in year one, and you listed all those reasons, yeah, I mean, you just can't do it at a place like Louisville. Maybe in another place you can, but not at a place like Louisville. There's just too many resources, you know, too high of expectations, too many people counting on you to have that sort of year, and for you to just say, ah, doesn't count. Sorry.
The one thing that has really driven me crazy over the last 22 months or so, and look, if you're of the belief that Kenny Payne deserves a third year, like, I don't hate you for that opinion. Like, you're welcome to have your opinion. If you were very in favor of the Kenny Payne hire and thought he was the best guy, like, I'm not pointing and saying, ha, like, you're wrong. We all want Louisville basketball to get back to being good. I don't judge anybody for their opinions. Everyone can fan however they want to. Everyone can believe whatever they want to. The one thing that I have disliked about this back and forth between the fan base over the last almost 2 years now is this rewriting of history that somehow people expected Kenny Payne to go to the Final Four in year one, or everyone had way too high expectations for his first year. It's total bullshit. Most fans wanted the same thing, especially after we saw the roster, because I think we all agreed, you know, the roster was not at a place where we hoped it would be under Payne, this guy who was going to bring us all these five-star kids and the best players out of the transfer portal. I think we all recognized that, like, the first roster was not going to be reflective of how hopefully the program was going to look moving forward under Payne. So all we wanted to see in year one was insane effort. The effort had been up and down in the last year under Mac and Mike Pegues. Like, effort level under a new head coach, regardless of the pieces that he inherits, should be off the charts. Like, you should be able to inspire any group of players, any group of 15 kids. If you can't, then it's a huge red flag. I think we wanted to see, like, a system that was going to work once he got his pieces in place. Like we didn't know what type of system he was going to bring. We still kind of don't. But we wanted to see it work in the first year. I think we wanted also to see him demonstrate both in games and off the court that he had the intangibles necessary to be the next great Louisville men's basketball head coach. None of those things happened. We fell woefully short in every single category. And that has to matter. Like, I get that the talent on last year's team was not great, but it wasn't 4-28 bad. I think we can all agree with that. At least we all should be able to agree with that. And let's just say now, for the sake of argument, let's say that this is Kenny Payne's first season. Let's say this is year one. Your actual one never happened. This is still like the worst fucking thing we've ever seen outside of last year. You know, it's not like this is some sort of like gigantic resounding "I told you so" from the Kenny Payne camp. We're 6-11. We're 1-5 in the worst ACC that we've ever played. We're 194 on KenPom. We're 236 in the net rankings. we're not quite as bad as we were last year in those two categories at this point in the season, but we're pretty damn close. Like this is still, if you took last year off the table, this is still the worst season that any of us have ever seen as Louisville men's basketball fans. And this is supposed to be worthy of thumping your chest over. Like, if this were Kenny Payne's first season, we would all have significant questions about like his ability as a head coach. I think we'd have fewer than we do right now, given the 4-28 record on top of this. But there would still be a lot of red flags out there right now if this were year one. And I think there'd still be a lot of concern out there about, is this really the guy if this were year one? And the fact that it's just the latest year is further evidence that we cannot do this again. We just can't.
I think, and this is the last point I'll make on this, Kenny has come from like only winning situations, like as far as like being an assistant in the NBA, being at UK, winning a national title at Louisville. Like he really, like he's come from a lot of winning. And I think because of that, he is very stubborn in his way. Like his way works, like whatever he does works. Like he's a stubborn guy. And when you're winning, being stubborn is great. But obviously here, something has gone off the rails and it just looks like he has no ability to adjust. And when I say that, I mean zero reason there wasn't any coaching turnover over the offseason. Like you had to get an in-game guy on that bench, like to be like, hey, we won 4 games last year. Like to bring back the same staff. Very stubborn. Like the system, the defensive system, even though I have no idea what it is, seems like it hasn't changed. So, you know, his willingness, like you said, he probably was going guys after the portal and struck out, but like it just seems like his willingness to kind of like for these first couple of years, like bring in impactful transfers to change the program instead of building it up. You know, another sign of stubbornness. So I think that's just kind of the mentality he has, and he doesn't want to change it. But it's like, dude, this isn't, you know, New Mexico State where you get 3 years to do this. Like, we're paying you to win now. Like, and, you know, from what we've seen the last 2 years, it seems like we're so fucking far away still.
New Mexico State did fire its first year head coach in the middle of last year and shut down the program. So maybe not the best example, but
yeah.
Sure. And guess what? They rebuilt to a point where they almost beat us in the very next year on our home floor. So there was that. I think Kenny Payne's defense, I think it's been, I'm going to coin it the maybe they'll miss defense. You know, hey, yeah. maybe they'll miss. I don't know. It's just like, I don't understand it. I don't know where we go from here. I don't. You're right. He acts like it's such a slap in the face that somebody would ask him a question about changing the staff and not changing anything after a 4-28 season. I just don't get it. And all of this stuff just doesn't. It doesn't make any sense. I feel like I had one other thing to add, and I don't. I've forgotten what it was. The maybe don't miss defense.
It was probably negative.
It was not going to be a wild defense of Kenny Payne and what we've seen here. It's bad. It is. And like acting like this is not the lack of accountability does drive me crazy. The every press conference being some sort of variation of, hey, it's my fault, but now let me tell you exactly why it's not my fault. It's, you know, last year it was players from bad families that don't have good character. And now it's still the players. We're trying to teach them how to fight. We're trying to teach them what the name across the jersey means. And they just don't do it. And it's the fans. It's bad luck. It's all this stuff. It's never just him.
And we'll never find this answer out. Sorry. We'll never find this answer out. Do you think part of the reason he says it is because like when he has conversations with Josh Hurd, like maybe that's like the language Josh is saying, like, hey, last year was a complete mess. Like that we're kind of grading you on year one here. Like this is your year one. And that's what scares me the most is like, if Josh is potentially thinking that way, and I don't know how we'd ever know that. Like, I guess we'll find out if he gets released at the end of the year, but that's what kind of scares me.
It's starting to scare a lot of people. Like I'm seeing it more and more on social media, on the text line for the radio show, like people are terrified that he's going to get a third year and it's going to be, you know, does Josh have a different measure of success than we do? Like, is Josh having pressure put on him by whoever? But like, people are starting to get like truly, I don't think terrified is hyperbolic. I think people are legit terrified that we're going to get a third year of this guy and that it's going to be more of the same and that we're going to just waste time.
You can throw me in that boat because the longer it goes, like, I mean, again, maybe he's just waiting till the end of the year. Like, can you imagine like the final horn of the ACC or whatever our season ends? Like, how much I'm going to be refreshing Twitter. It's like, okay, is this going to happen or what? Here we go. Here we go. like, it's going to be the most anxious couple days of my life because if for whatever reason, I mean, we do bring this guy back for a third year. Oh my God. I mean, you want to talk about the pitchforks coming out.
I can 100% see this being a situation where, like, if what I said earlier doesn't happen and we don't win like a handful of games next month and we finish like 3-17 in the ACC and everyone knows what's going to happen, I can absolutely see Kenny Payne winning two games in the conference tournament. Just so we're like, all right, you know, we wake up that Tuesday, we're like, it's the last day, and then we go out there and we beat Boston College, and then the next day we shock Miami and we're in the quarterfinals and we're playing competitive, and it's like, okay, this motherfucker. It's like Tim Miles in Nebraska when he won those three games in the Big Ten tournament when everyone knew he was going to get fired. I can see that. I can definitely see that happen. I don't have any more thoughts on this, I don't think. I didn't rant, so don't say that I ranted. That didn't happen. I think I've said all I can say. I think, have you said all you want to say? Should we take some questions?
Yeah, let's take some questions.
All right, before we do that, reminding you about our guys over at Home Field Apparel. Home Field Apparel has the best college sports gear that you'll find anywhere on the internet, anywhere in person. They've got the softest hoodies, the best retro design t-shirts, the coolest joggers, the best dad hats. They've got a ridiculously awesome line of Louisville stuff right now, a new Denny Crum t-shirt, a great bomber jacket, all sorts of gear at homefieldapparel.com. And if you use our promo code CHRONICLE15 at checkout, it's going to save you 15% off your first purchase from Home Field Apparel. We love our guys there at homefieldapparel.com. Get suited for the upcoming season at Home Field Apparel. All right, question here. Cardinal Strong says, Sophie's Choice, in the next 2 years, would you rather have the men's basketball team go to a Final Four or the football program hosting a college football playoff game?
Gosh, I feel like I flip-flop on this. Like, I mean, obviously, if they go to a Final Four, like, something dramatic has happened in our basketball program, and that would just be epic. But, I mean, the ramifications for our football program going to a playoff game, I just don't think I could pass that up, to be honest.
I'm going to give, like, a snaky answer here, though, because that's my initial thought. But the wording here is the football program hosts a playoff game. We could still go to the playoff and not host in the next 2 years. And I think going to a Final Four would be this, like something would have gone dramatically right. To go where we are right now, losing games to DePaul, which, have you seen DePaul has lost 5 of its last 6 games by 25 points or more in the Big East?
Oh, boy.
I mean, that DePaul team is like the worst DePaul team of all time, which is saying something. We got waxed by them on the road. Like, going from that place where we are right now to a Final Four at some point over the next 2 years – like, we did something incredibly right. We made a wild hire. We did whatever. But, like, basketball would be fine if we're going to the Final Four in the next 2 years. Football could still go to the playoff without hosting. And even if they don't go to the playoff the next 2 years, I still feel good about football. So I'm going to go basketball Final Four.
Okay. No, that's fair. By the way, I don't know why I never thought about this, but, like, when I hear host playoff game, like, the picture in my head is like the rowdiest atmosphere ever. And obviously it's going to be, but for whatever reason, I like totally forgot, like, God, if this happens, it's going to be like December the 10th or something. It's going to be freezing, but that's just me being a baby.
Yeah. I mean, what if we host like Alabama? It's like almost a sellout. We'd be like, God damn it, Louisville fans.
Yeah, I know, but
I don't think that would happen, but it would be embarrassing if it
Brom's going to be so good. We're going to build a dome in the next 5 years.
Doctor of Dunk says, what would the minimum seed/performance for the men's basketball team have to be for you to publicly perform Everybody, Backstreet's Back every day for a month? If Louisville wins the ACC tournament this year and goes to the Sweet 16, I'll perform Backstreet's Back every day for a month. 100%.
I mean, I'm right there with you. I'll get on the white shirt and I'll be out there grooving.
Oh my God, we're back again. Candy Payne is his coaching friends.
As long as I get to be Aaron Carter.
By the way, did I tell you Sky Clark blocked me on Twitter?
Yeah, you told me. That's
I don't blame him.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, kids, you know, he's a kid, but I'm sure he seems like a pretty chill guy that just, yeah, like, you know, maybe just doesn't want negative energy in our life. Like, I give off negative energy, so.
I don't think I even tweeted anything about him, but, like, I get it. If I was one of those kids, I wouldn't be, like, following me or other fans or whatever. Like, I'd be trying to block it all out, too. Like, I hold no ill will towards him whatsoever. It did remind me, though, when I saw it over the weekend, like, it reminded me, one of the most embarrassing moments of my professional life was when Kevin Ware, it was like the year after he'd had the bad injury, and he'd sent out some tweets. I don't even remember what it was. I don't remember exactly what the story was, but I was doing the college basketball gig for SB Nation, and my editors were like, we need you to write something on this Kevin Ware thing. Go aggregate, go get some of his tweets and you know, just plug those into the story. And I had to be like, I can't do that because Kevin Ware has blocked me on Twitter. It was very embarrassing. They're like, okay, I think someone else can get the codes. I was like, they're like, why? I was like, I don't know. He was blocking everybody at that point. It was a very strange time. Lewis in the Ville says, I would love to hear more comments from you two on Rick Bozich. Shockingly, he concurs with KP that it's year one. Also, what's the average retirement age for a sports journalist? I disagree with Rick. I'm sorry.
He definitely, you can tell, has like some sort of personal relationship with KP, and you know, shout out for him sticking up for his friend. But you also have a job to do, and I don't know. I feel like he's like purposely missling the fan base here. I don't know how to say this. Like, he, not him specifically, but like the media, like, has some sort of an impact on like how these things shake out sometimes, and he almost feels like an enabler, which just kind of makes the situation, you know, that much worse.
People have talked about, I mean, since I kind of burst onto the scene, and other people burst on the scene in like 2007, 2008, like 15 years ago, there's been all this talk about the fan media and, you know, the sunshine and rainbows and them. I don't think I've ever seen anybody, fan media, big J journalist, old media, whatever, ride as hard as Rick Bozich has been riding for Kenny Payne. I really don't think I ever have. Like, you know, maybe John, when I did the show with him, with Tom Jurich, but, you know, they were very close personal friends. Like, he wasn't going to say anything bad about his close personal friend. But this is, it's something to watch for sure. Like, I don't think he said one bad thing. And every single story includes some sort of, like, just very obvious defense reference of Kenny Payne, like bringing up Rick Pitino and scandals and stuff. And it's very strange.
I picture Crawford every time Bozich comes out with a column, like reading it like, oh, Jesus Christ. But
I would love to hear Eric's true thoughts, like behind closed doors, about how he feels about all this. Cause it's something to follow for sure. Brad says, Mike, in a hypothetical Lions versus Ravens Super Bowl, how hard would you be rooting against Lamar? I mean, I'd have to be rooting very hard against Lamar. It's sort of like, that is kind of a disastrous scenario, but, you know, I got to do what I got to do. Dan, are you ready for your moon update of the week?
No, definitely don't want my moon update of the week. I've had enough.
It's going to be a waxing gibbous this weekend. I'm terrified of that. I was very nervous when the waxing gibbous news broke, but somebody put my mind at ease yesterday. The waxing gibbous seems to only affect the Lions on Thanksgiving. They are 4-1 in their last 5 waxing gibbous moon games. That put my mind at ease a little bit. I'm still feeling good about this weekend and the possibility of, it feels weird to even say this, the Lions playing in the NFC Championship game. It's just, we're close. I can't believe it's happening. We will do an emergency pod if that happens, Stan. You will have to be a part of it. It's going to be fantastic. Very excited about this weekend's game. Wearing a Lions sweatshirt right now. Feeling good.
I hope Baker performs his own waxing on Saturday or Sunday or whenever the game is. Dude, I mean, my God. What is this now? Lions getting every fucking call in the book?
Jesus Christ, like Matt Stafford's over here getting absolutely.
They got one call.
Oh my God.
The offsides that kept the Rams, that ruined the Lions drive in the first half also happened. So fuck. Yeah, was it pass interference at the end of the game? Yes. Do we deserve that call after getting fucked for the last 25 years? Yes. I'm not going to apologize for that.
Plus, forget the roughing the passer call. Like, Stafford just got absolutely knocked out cold, basically. But, yeah, I don't know. It'll God, you're all's road, the Rams and the Buccaneers. Like, my God, I'd pay money for the Vikings to ever have a road that easy if they got the Rams, in the playoffs.
The Rams were the hottest team in the NFL going into the playoffs.
Get out of here.
Everyone talked about how fucked we got with our draw because we had to play the Rams. We should have been the 2 seed because of the terrible Cowboys call, which, by the way, ball don't lie. The world restored itself, righted itself, righted the ship. It was a perfect scenario. Now the Lions get to host another playoff game.
Yeah, I'm definitely like, I'm obviously, I hate the Packers. I hate the Lions. So give me a Niners Bucks NFC championship and then we'll go from there. I do like the Baker redemption. I hated Baker like in college, and I'm like one of those guys that's come around on him.
I kind of am too. Like he's been entertaining. I like the way there was a little bit of, do you see the controversy this week with him and CJ Gardner-Johnson? Like Gardner-Johnson had a quote from the week of the Rams game talking about the receiving core, and he was like, they're really good, they're probably the best receiving core that you know, we faced outside of maybe that group from Tampa. And he's like, Mike Evans and those guys, like, they're, if they had a quarterback, if they had a good quarterback, they'd be incredible. And like Baker got asked about it this week, and I thought he handled it well. He brought up the fact that they, you know, Gardner Johnson had brought up Gage, who hadn't played at all this year, and he's like, maybe he needs to study some more film because he tore his ACL in the preseason and all this stuff. It was a good way to handle the situation. I was like, yeah, that was well done.
He's maturing. But
he's maturing a little bit. He's kind of what Johnny Manziel was supposed to be. If he just harnessed that bad energy a little bit more and was better at football. Let's see. Southern Card says, any chance in your opinion that KP is let go before the end of the year, or are we stuck with this until March? I mean, this is no like inside info, but at this point, I'm just assuming he gets the whole year.
Yeah, you know? I'd be surprised if he didn't, especially with them picking it up from an effort standpoint.
David says, just talk about the NFL for a while. Also, is this the red season? Is this red season going to be fun or not? I really enjoyed last year.
It's like, well, it's like NFL, nobody cares. The Reds. yes, we are very excited. Vegas has the over-under, I think, at 86 wins. I mean, the pitching depth we have is unbelievable. I do expect like some of our hitters to kind of hit that sophomore year slump. We had a lot of rookies last year. But, I mean, we just got so many moving pieces, so many young guys. The potential is off the chart, but we do need like probably 3 pitchers to become like bona fide everyday horses for us, which last year we didn't have.
It's like nobody cares about the NFL playoffs right now. Could I interest you in a 5-minute conversation about Brett Suter?
Very excited for Brett Suter, but we needed him.
What do you think about what we got in return for Daniel Duarte?
Yeah, that's a little bit of a controversial roster spot. Anyways, no, I will say this, NFL, and you're gonna like shit on me for this because for whatever reason, all right, this was like 2 years ago, okay? I made a comment that I said, hey, if it's a playoff game and I want like a quarterback, like I like Justin Herbert over Lamar because I think in the playoffs, I think you're going to have to throw the ball downfield. And at that point, I thought Herbert was a better downfield passer than Lamar.
Because you're a fucking idiot. You're a fucking idiot.
Now, this year, like, of course, I mean, you and
he's
all the other
guys. He's not quarterbacky enough for you, is what you said.
I did not say that.
Big quarterbacky guy, Dan Snard right here, folks.
Here's the deal. Beginning of the year.
At DanZone85 on Twitter. Let him know how you feel.
Okay, shut the fuck up. The beginning of this year, I literally was like, all right, Lamar is, like, taking his game to another level. He's awesome.
you know, he's throwing the ball super well, blah, blah, blah. But obviously that goes in one ear, out the other. So every time I tweet something positive about Lamar, like, oh, no, no, Justin Herbert. Like, and I like can't even say a compliment to Lamar anymore without getting Justin Herbert thrown in my face. So I do want, obviously, the Ravens to make a run here and Lamar to get a Super Bowl. That would be incredible, even though I know you don't think so.
Dan just, you know, he misses Flacco. There's something about Flacco that he just...
that clip is all time. I just can't put my finger on it. Something about Flacco.
There's something about Flacco that I just trusted a little bit more, you know?
It pocket really passer. That's all-time you. Clip.
That's basically you talking about Lamar Jackson. Congrats. You're that guy.
I'm telling you, wait, if Harbaugh or someone comes to Chargers, wait till you see Herbert. I promise you. He's had nothing there.
He's a fucking joke. You're a joke too. It's a ridiculous. He's a two-time MVP, for God's sake. As much as I want like the Lions to go to the Super Bowl and win, like just behind that is my desire to see Lamar Jackson shut everybody the fuck up and not just win a couple of playoff games and go to the Super Bowl, but play really well in these two games. And I hope it starts this weekend because those people are the most annoying people in the world. People like you, Dan.
Jesus Christ. Moving on.
Scott says, what would you do if Kenny gets a third year announced during your Disney World vacation next month? Would you come back? Would you become one of those Disney adults and just never come back? We're going to Disney World next month. Very excited about it for like 4 days. If that happened, I mean, I would love to see Mary take a picture of me like on the Small World ride, just like staring into a void, just like, you know, like staring off into a distance, pissed off at the world. Because that's how I would be. I would probably just move into Disney World, just live there.
You know what's funny? Because we're going to Disney World in March. Is this like a trend? It's like, all right, like these are the Disney years, folks. Like obviously nothing going on in February or March. Get your Disney trips in now. So, yeah, I think it's like I would never – like our kids' spring break I think is the first weekend of the NCAA tournament. And granted, I still want to watch the games, but like not in a million years would I be like, oh yeah, we're going to Disney, you know, during first weekend of March Madness. But now it's like, all right, like I guess I better get them in now.
So we 100% did this because of Kenny Payne. Like that's not even a joke.
Yeah, Kenny, the travel advisor for Disney.
Like February and March are my busiest times of the year from a work perspective because, you know, Louisville basketball. And then also like I'm still doing freelance college basketball stuff. I'll cover the NCAA tournament again this year. So like those weeks have always been off limits. And then this year we were so bad. It was obvious that we were going to be so bad again that Mary was like, she really wanted to go in February. She really didn't want to go on spring break or to go during the summer when it's just like more crowded and ungodly hot. And so I was like, fine, we're going, we have like a week off between games in February. And so we're taking those 5 days and going, but I would not have done it if the basketball program was going to be good. And like, it's just, yeah, this is 100% a direct result of what Kenny Payne has done to this program. So,
I really wish that we were going the same week and like we could be like the cover boys for the Kenny Payne era. It's just us in our Mickey Mouse ears, like riding Splash Mountain with our hands up. It's like, this is the Kenny Payne era. It's like trips to Disney.
God, it really is though. John says, would you rather have a Lions Super Bowl win or the Cards hire Scott Drew this offseason? God, that's a good question.
That is a good question.
I mean, I'm probably going to go Super Bowl just because there's no guarantee. Like, I think Scott Drew would kill it here. There's no guarantee. And I think we could also get somebody else who would kill it here, too. He says, secondary question, Dan, why are Vikings fans so whiny about Kirby Joseph?
Well, first off, we heard it here first. Mike Rutherford hates the Cardinal basketball program.
Stop.
All right, the Kirby Joseph thing, obviously I'm fucking butthurt about it because now TJ Hawkinson is going to be out for like some of next year because this guy has dirty below the waist hits. And it was awesome to see Matt Stafford run right up to him and call him out. If you haven't seen the clip, he went low on Tyler Higbee the week after, 2 weeks after he did on TJ Hawkinson. So yeah, dirty player.
Is he supposed to go high and get penalized?
What's
he supposed to do? Can you just not tackle him?
No, you don't have to go low or high. Like, go in the middle. Like, wrap up.
He jumped. That guy's like, he's got 150 pounds on him. What's he supposed to do? Just let him truck him?
Hey,
football.
Listen, Matt Stafford, guy watched a lot of tape, all right? Seen every football play you could probably see. Says he's dirty. If Matt Stafford says he's dirty, he's dirty.
Well, Matt Stafford's kind of a loser now, so.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
He is. What do you want me to say? Kind of a loser. Let's see. This question from Tony says, who are your all's top three football transfers that are coming in that you're the most excited about? We've got, I mean, a few new ones that we have to choose from. Tyler Barron would be in my top three for sure.
Lacey.
We just got from Tennessee. Colin Lacey probably is in my top three. I'm trying to do like kind of a, I mean, Penny Boone is an obvious choice. God, we have, I mean, there, we have, so, we have like 27 guys to pick from.
Yeah.
I would probably throw Ja'Cory Brooks in there, the Alabama transfer. I know the pedigree, having guys who play, I mean, cause it's not like he was just a guy who was a five-star recruit who went to Alabama who just didn't pan out. He was their second leading receiver 2 years ago. Like he made big time plays for really good Alabama teams. And we need, I think the USC game showcased just how much we need guys with that level of upside. So I'm very excited for him.
I'm intrigued by the kid they brought in, the receiver they brought in that was like kind of from a no-name place. I forget his name. I'm losing track here.
Well, Colin Lacey's from South Alabama.
Not Lacey.
You're talking about Antonio Meeks.
Yes.
From like, Tuskegee.
Yes. That feels like one that like Brom like pinpointed and was like, I want this kid. I'm going to go him as my wild card of the group.
I like that. I liked his quotes talking about how like he knows he can play at this level and all this stuff. But yeah, you got him and a former five-star recruit from Alabama in the same transfer portal class. Yeah, we're an equal opportunity transfer portal king. That's who Jeff Brohm is.
Yeah. I mean, the pulling these three guys from Ole Miss is hilarious. And I mean, whatever we're doing, Jesus, like, you know, I would love to, you know, get a behind the scenes look because it's incredible.
Derek says, will the buyout be $8 million instead of $6 million on April 1st since last year didn't count? It'd be nice.
Yeah, I mean.
Well, that wouldn't be nice, actually. That'd be bad, but it'd be nice for him.
Yeah, I would. That's another thing I'd like is just a list of all the buyout money that we're paying and going to be paying.
Chase says, any chance that Curtis Williams stays through a coaching change? I would hope so. I mean, if we do get a new coach for next year, like there are, as much as I'd like to just cut ties this entire era, there are pieces from this team that I would like to bring back that I think could work well next year.
No, I agree. Like I think Tyler should not be playing like on a good team. Tyler should be the energy guy coming in, playing in spurts. And like the fact that he's had to play as many minutes, like, you know, he's a freshman, he's out of control. Like he makes some bad decisions, but I really like what I see from like this kid's got game standpoint. I like Curtis Williams a lot. I think he needs to get better on the defensive end, but I think offensively, I like what I see. And then Caleb Glenn, I think like, he can develop, like, I think he does like a lot of the little things that we probably don't see. But I think with a year or two more in the program, he could be maybe like a 10.8 rebound type of guy.
I can see if you've seen what Dre Davis is doing this year as a senior at Seton Hall, he's averaging like 12 and 8. Like, I can see Caleb Glenn developing into that guy by the time he's a senior, like doing the dirty work. If he develops a little bit offensively, he can be that type of player. But right now, without JJ and Dennis, we're asking him to be like the secondary big man, and he's just – he can't do that. That's not his game for sure. Crypto Bro says, where are our basketball recruits, any of them? That's the other thing about this whole like this is technically my first year. Even if we accepted the product on the court, we're doing nothing off the court. We're not recruiting players. We're not signing players. We're banking on Kenny Payne killing it in the transfer portal, which is something that he's never done. So, yeah, I mean it's he's recruiting like he thinks he's not going to be here next year.
Yeah, I mean, I think like that's the on the court stuff is one thing, but I mean, I think that's a biggest part of the evaluation as anything. It's like, all right, what's the future look like? Maybe I shouldn't even say maybe. Like I was gonna say, maybe he has guys lined up in the transfer portal that we just don't know about. But I had to stop putting faith in that, you know, for the past 2 years. So after the past 2 years, so. I don't know what the plan is, but I'd say that's probably one of the biggest indictments if you like looked at it from the outside looking in.
There are like 7 questions about Rick Bozich here. People have strong thoughts on Rick Bozich today. Terry says, what's your season power rankings from least favorite to most favorite? Talking about winter, fall, summer, spring.
Even though I'm born in summer, I'd say fall's one. I'll go.
He said going from least favorite to favorite.
Oh, sorry. I'm not a cold guy, so I'll go winter 4, spring 3rd, summer 2nd, fall 1st.
I think mine have like totally flipped since I was a kid. I used to hate fall because of school starting and stuff. And I used to love summer because school. I think summer's my least favorite season though.
Ouch.
I know. Adult summer sucks. It's so hot. Like, you know, there's just like people aren't working. It's just like everything's off. There's no sports besides baseball. I'll go summer 4, winter 3. Winter used to be my favorite growing up. Spring 2, fall 1.
No, that's fair. I mean, fall, there's just so much going on. Like,
yeah.
It's incredible. And like, you still get those bits and pieces of good weather. But yeah, I don't know. I don't do cold.
All right. I just realized how long we've been talking here. We need to wrap this thing up. So apologies to the questions that we did not get to, including the 75 Rick Bozich questions. Do you have a Dan in the Dumps for this week?
I couldn't remember if I told this or not, but did we tell the sled thief story?
I don't know if we did or not.
Well, if I did, I apologize. But like, I have to tell it just because it's a snow day today. And you can chime in here because you were there.
I threw the snowball.
Yeah, this was like 2001, 2002. This happened. We used to sled off the side, like in the back of Owl Creek. There's a soccer field, and then if you start walking towards Hurstburn, like that road over there, that we called it the freeway, where like you could sled down the side of the freeway. One of the best sledding hills of all time. Now it's like overgrown, and there, you know, you can't do anything on it anymore. But at the time, it was like the hill. Well, anyways, we were up there with a bunch of people. And yeah, like you said, you throw a snowball at these cars going by. They're going like past Dorsey Lane on Hurstburn all the way up to like Westport Road where that White Castle is.
Let me stop you right here, because you act like I was everybody was throwing snowballs at cars that were driving past. I pick up one. I'm trying to fit in here. And I do throw it at like this gigantic Escalade with tinted windows.
I think it was a Suburban.
It was terrifying. It was the worst choice I could have made. It was terrible. And
yeah.
That car just slams on its brakes. And I was like, oh, fuck.
Slams on its brakes. We booked down the hill. We probably walk, I would say, maybe 75 yards. And all of a sudden, we see like a car kind of come up and they go to the bottom of the hill. And they take our sleds and they just like put them in the back of their car. And we're like, what the hell? And we like start to like kind of start walking, even though that wasn't even the car that you hit that took the sleds.
Right.
It was another car. So we start kind of like walking back not question this guy, but like be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, what's going on? This guy was like getting ready to drive off. We look over, I would say maybe 40 yards to our left. We're in this huge field. Like, it's like the end of like the movie, you know, the four brothers, like just out in the middle of like nothing but snow. And we see the Suburban that you threw the snowball at. And I swear to God, it was one of the most terrifying moments of my life. They pulled
it was literally
off
a movie scene. Your little brother goes, oh no, look. I turn in slow motion and see a giant Suburban just like ripping through this field right at us. I think they'll run us over.
I mean, literally, it was going 35 miles an hour off the road through the snow and the grass, driving straight at me, you, and our other buddy, Jason, as we're running from a Suburban driving off-road, and it, like, pinned us up against, like, this, like, set of woods, and the guy gets out, like, all pissed off. He's like, what the hell? I got kids in the backseat. Where do you guys go to school? And of course, like our buddy Jason gives in immediately. He like puts his hands up like he's arrested. He's like, my name's Jason. I go to Trinity High School.
No, he goes, he starts yelling at Walsh. Walsh goes, I didn't even fucking throw it. And he goes, well, who fucking threw it? I'm like, here we go. I was like, this is the day that I die. And I was like, I very much did like the yes sir, no sir. And I think I had a Trinity toboggan on. He's like, you go to Trinity? I was like, yes, sir. He's like, you should know better than do that shit. He's like, I got my whole family here if you want to fucking fight. I was like, oh my God. Like, I literally thought I was going to die. I thought we all were going to die. It was terrifying.
So did I. I mean, that's really, I mean, the guy ended up just being pissed off and he drove away. So there's no like dramatic ending. But if you guys could have seen the scene of the Suburban driving through the field, chasing after us, it was, like you said, a scene out of a movie and one that I won't forget.
So the other guy like took all of the sleds. He cut holes in like the little inner tubes and stuff. He like ripped them up. I guess he was just like pissed off. And he like our other friend like Rodney went back to try and get him. And he was like, "I'll give you my number and like you can like come get the sleds like if the other guy's okay." So Rodney calls me that night. He's like, "Hey man, you're gonna have to call this guy and go get the sleds." And I was like, "No, I'm not gonna do that."
I forgot about that. That was hilarious.
Yeah, I was like, that's absolutely not going to happen. So we never got the sleds back.
Yeah, no, good times, though.
Sled thief. All right, so Cards take on Wake Forest on the road tomorrow. Do you want to do a quick prediction here? How do we think this one plays out against Steve Forbes and company?
I feel like we played better on the road. But Wake Forest, I was looking at their schedule. Looks like they've done all right at home. I'll say we lose. I'll say 78-72.
I think this is going to be another cover, like you said, because KenPom projects us to lose by 16, which means the spread will probably be like 13.5, 14. I think we lose by 8 sounds about right. I'm going to say 80-72. Another game where, hey, we played hard and all this stuff, but we don't get it done. And the drum beat continues. Regardless of what happens, we'll talk to you guys next week. We'll have more updates on Louisville basketball, and also what Kenny Payne is saying in post-game press conferences, I'm sure. We'll get you ready for Duke on Tuesday next week, and we'll react to all that good stuff. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. It's the best way to find out when new episodes are available. And we will talk to you guys next week. Go Cards.
Go Cards.